Hey, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Spoiler Country.
Hey, hey, people of Earth, it's time to enter the Spoilerverse via our secret portal at the exclusive Arctic Club in beautiful downtown Seattle with our hosts, John and Kenrick. Welcome to Spoiler Country.
Hey, if you're listening to our show for the first time and you're on one of the social medias that we're on, like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, any of those kinds of things, you should always check us out on Spoilerverse.com. But if you want to keep up with our latest episodes, you should bring out your smartphone, get into your favorite podcatcher, find Spoiler Country, and hit subscribe. Then you'll get all our new stuff.
And if you want to reach out to us, you can do that in two ways. You can call us, leave us a voicemail at 707-656-2080. Again, 707-656-2080. Or you can shoot us an email at spoilercountry@gmail.com.
Star Search fans and Jeopardy winners, welcome back to Spoiler Country. I'm Kenneth Regan. That's just Mr. Horsley. And today on the show, it's Garrett Wong, part two.
I'm just Mr. Horsley today. I'm just him.
Well,
I feel so let down.
You know, that's a pretty big jest to fill, though.
I get. Now you call me fat? Dude.
100%.
Man, I'm just going to have to go cry in a corner now, man.
It's not cool. Do it. Make sure if you suffer quietly.
I will not suffer quietly. I will suffer loudly. I'll make you hear.
Pity table, party of one.
Pity table, party of one. I'm going to be loud. All right. Anyway. Part two, man. This is awesome. They talked for such a long time, and if you haven't listened to one yet, Kenrick, you need to. It's a lot of fun. He talks about so much cool stuff.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. I'm down. Let's do this.
Yeah, and he said he'll come back on to talk more about his new show, Phoenix, and because they talked a lot about Star Trek because Jeff likes Star Trek, which is cool.
Yeah,
and I like Star Trek too.
Yeah.
But this is a lot of fun. Again, as I said in the last episode, I'm super excited we got him to come on because he was my favorite character on Voyager.
Yeah.
And it's awesome.
That's cool. Well, let's just get into it.
Now, were your parents aware of Star Trek, the franchise, prior to you getting the role?
Yeah, it's interesting. Years later, I found out that when my mother was pregnant with me in her belly, the only show she would watch was 1966 original series Star Trek.
Oh, wow. Wow, that got implanted right into you, huh? Yeah,
it really did. I obviously clearly do not remember being in the womb, but, you know, my later years when I was 8 years old is when I saw 1977 Star Wars in the movie theaters and fell in love with sci-fi. So I've been a science fiction fan my whole life, pretty much. But I found out from my parents that Star Trek specifically was the one TV show my mom watched religiously when I was in the belly.
That's awesome.
Meant to be.
So, I mean, and the character you play, Ensign Kim, really is a great character for Star Trek Voyager. Because he is an ensign and obviously would be new to the Federation, everything else, he was a fantastic audience surrogate for anyone watching. Did you kind of view him when you're performing the role as being sort of our eyes into what it is to become a Federation officer?
Yeah, got a lot of fan comments early on. And back in those days, there was no Facebook, there was no Instagram, there was no Twitter. There was AOL. And AOL had these chat rooms that you could go into. And there were fan chat rooms, there were Voyager chat rooms. And I would go into those rooms, you know, just kind of wandering around. And it was hilarious because when I first said that I was who I was, there was a lot of people kind of trashing me, saying, "Get out of here, you liar," you know? And they were like, they didn't. So what I did was I ended up I ended up getting the phone number of one of the people in the chat room. I said, I'm going to call this one person in this chat room and have a real physical, I'm going to have a conversation with them. And I'm sure they will know by the sound of my voice that it's really me. And so I called him up. He's like, holy crap, it's you. I go, yeah, it's me. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I'm Garrett Wong, for God's sake, you know? And so he became sort of my enforcer. Like every chat room we were in, he was like, look, this is really Garrett. He's called me before. I know it's him, you know? So anyway, there were definitely fans that commented in the early days, and they were saying, you know, you're kind of like the everyman on Star Trek Voyager. You're like the window into Starfleet. Like we see everything through your character's eyes. And I said, yeah, I get that. You know, I do see that. And he was a blank canvas. He just graduated from Starfleet Academy. This is his first posting. This is his very first mission. So really, you know, he's got a ton of book learning, but he has no on the job experience, right? This is his very first job. And I think that's something that everyone can relate to. So he is the most relatable character right off the bat, right? Because everybody has the first day at work, the first day in high school, the first day, everyone has experienced the first day of something. Whereas not everyone can watch Voyager and say, yep, I have been the captain of a starship before. You know, you can't really relate to Janeway, you know, off the bat. Yeah. You can relate to her if you're a woman watching another woman on screen saying, okay, yeah. But Kim, by far, Harry Kim is the one character that everyone can say, I understand what he's going through. So, yeah.
And I think that was fantastic. And I think when another very intelligent thing they did in Voyager is that they teamed you up with Robert McNeil's character. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you guys, it's kind of, I guess he was kind of like in the character, kind of like the mentor for Kim and kind of taught him how things really are in the world. And I think that was done so well. Because you guys are, I guess you and Robert McNeil are kind of like intrinsically linked, I guess, forever in the world of Star Trek.
Yeah.
How was he, what was it like to work with him?
It was great. He at that point had been Robbie. I call him Robbie. Robbie. And the thing is, we had three Roberts on the show. So right in the very beginning, we had to make a delineation between the three Roberts. So Robert Duncan McNeil took on the role of Robbie. So we all said Robbie. Robert Beltran became Robert. And then Robert Picardo, the doctor, became Bob. So then we had Robert, Bob, and Robbie. And Robbie had been, you know, he had been acting forever. He had done Broadway. He went to Juilliard, you know, so he was sort of he was a lifer. You know, he had been doing acting forever. And the minute I first, the first time I saw him, I was being introduced to him when we were doing some hair department tests on how to get my hair a certain way. And I just bumped into him right outside the hair trailer. And the production assistant that was walking me into the hair appointment introduced me, said, and this is Robbie McNeil. This is Robert Duncan McNeil. He's playing the role of Tom Paris. And I looked at him and I thought, oh, you are a Masters of the Universe. You know, because I remember that movie when that movie came out. It's him and what's her face from Friends?
Courtney Cox.
Yeah. They're the leads in that. It's a really young Robbie, right? He's fresh faced. But I knew right off the bat who he was. And I was like starstruck. I was like, oh my God, it's him. Because I love that movie. I thought that movie was awesome. It was such a guilty pleasure kind of cheesy, you know, movie. I loved it. So, you know, when I met him, I'm like, oh, this is so cool. And he talks about our first meeting on our podcast that we do and the Delta Flyers. He talks about how, because I asked him, what was your first impression of me? And he said, I thought you were part of this young, hip Hollywood, you know, you were this young, hip Hollywood actor. I remember you had some young actress, you know, really pretty gal that was with you. And I don't remember that at all. I'm like, what? I go, who was with me? I don't remember this. And then I started thinking, oh, it might've been my friend Holly Fields. I don't know. So, but his impression was that I was the cool kid on the block, you know? And my impression was like, oh, I loved you on Masters of the Universe. So it was like, this is crazy, you know, first meeting. So working with him was great because right off the bat, I liked him immediately. He's such a funny guy. He's really, his sense of humor above all else, I felt was better than everyone else's. Like everyone on Voyager has a great sense of humor. They're all funny. If you watch Voyager, the misconception is there is only one funny person on the show, the doctor, but that's not true. Everybody on that show off camera is hilarious in their own right. But Robbie is a cut above all. Like he's even funnier than everyone else. It's just like, oh my God. So working with him, especially off camera, was great. And on camera was good. We had great chemistry there. The only, you know, thing that I was bummed about was that he never had any free time to hang out. Like every time we rapped, I was like, hey, let's go get a beer. And he'd look at me like, oh God, I really would like to, but I got to get home, you know, the wife, the kids. Like he had three young kids. It was like 4, 2, an infant is what he had, you know, that he was dealing with. So he couldn't, you know, he couldn't spend any time off camera with me. So really the one person that I spent, I would say most of my time off camera was Commander Chakotay. Robert Beltran is, you know, 15 years older than me. So literally another generation, right? But
yeah,
he was single. He wasn't married. So he was free to do stuff, you know? So he became my best bud off camera. But in terms of chemistry with McNeil, with Robbie, it was great. And it was great to work with him and things flowed well.
So you just mentioned that you guys do the Delta Flyers podcast, Norris. So for our listeners, what is the Delta Flyer podcast?
Yeah. Just to clarify, there is a podcast called the Delta Flyer without the S, singular. And that is a podcast by two Voyager fans. They have reviewed all the way up to the end of season 2, and then they stopped. And then I came up with the Delta Flyers with an S at the end. And this is a podcast idea that I've had for probably a decade. I've been wanting to do like a show, a recap show, talking about each episode of Voyager for over 10 years now. And really, I had this idea before any of the other podcasts that are based on shows with actors from the show. So for instance, Office Ladies are two of the series regulars from The Office talking about their show. That came out before ours. But I had this idea before they even thought about it, before The Office was even The Office, probably. And then same thing with the Community, that show. I think a couple of those guys are doing a podcast talking about their show. So I had this idea for a long time. And, you know, it was really the pandemic that sort of put this into high gear. I did do a podcast before the Delta Flyers called The Alpha Quadrant for about a year and a half, and then it stopped. And that was with the actor that played Nog on Deep Space Nine, Aaron Eisenberg, who has since passed. He passed away unexpectedly in 2019 in September. And so we had done that podcast together. And we were kind of like reviewing Discovery episodes. And then we started reviewing DS9 and Voyager back and forth. But then things happen, politics, and the podcast ended. So then, you know, when the pandemic hit, I sat there and I thought, maybe I can finally do my idea, the Voyager, the recap, the review, with the discussion of Voyager episodes. And then it was my significant other, Megan, who said, hey, why don't you ask Robbie to be a co-host? And I thought, I mean, I've had that idea to ask Robbie, because if you think about Paris and Kim, it's like peanut butter and jelly. They go together, right? It makes sense. But when I initially thought about this idea, I thought there's no way he could do it. I mean, he has been a very busy director of television for forever, ever since he finished Voyager. When Voyager ended, he stopped acting. He went right into directing, and he's been directing, you know, ever since. And directing really high profile stuff. Like he's at the top of his biz when it comes to television directors. He's right up there. So he's been directing and producing TV shows. So I thought there's no way. But once we were in the middle of the pandemic, Megan said, I bet you he's not doing anything right now. And I said, So in March, I called him, and March of 2020, and I said, hey, here's my idea. What do you think? He's like, let me call you back tomorrow. And he called me back. He's like, okay, I am interested, but we have to talk about a few things. Like, who's going to edit this? How are we going to do this? How are we going to do that? So he had 1,000 questions, and I'm going, oh my God. I'm like, I don't know. We'll figure it out together. Remember peanut butter and jelly? And he was like, oh, okay. So we did. And we launched in May of 2020, and we launched on Star Wars Day. So on May 4th is when we kind of started the whole thing up. We started on May 5th is what we did. So the day after Star Wars Day, it's when we premiered our first episode. And it immediately in the first month, we got over 100,000 downloads.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was just people were ready for it, you know? And so it's available on, you know, wherever you get your podcast from, whether it's Spotify or iTunes. We have a free version that anybody can listen to. And then we have a subscription service through Patreon. Patreon.com allows people to put up their work and have subscription levels. And so we have the ensign level, lieutenant level, the commander level, the captain level, the admiral level. And so these are different levels that you pay a monthly subscription fee to, and you end up receiving bonuses and also bonus content. So we will actually record, we'll record the show, and then we'll add another anywhere from 15 to another 30 minutes of bonus talk, you know, where we get a little, we dive a little bit deeper into the episode. We'll tell a few more stories that we wouldn't tell on the free one, you know. And so that's available to our Patreon patrons. And at the highest level, at the admiral level, those guys, they get a monthly Zoom call for anywhere between, it's usually about an hour and a half, maybe sometimes 2 hours, where Robbie and I are on a Zoom call with the admirals, and we just talk about, you know, Voyager, life, whatever, you know. It's sort of like a VIP meet and greet in a way.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's absolutely awesome. For those people like me who are doing podcasts and obviously trying to grow our podcast, mm-hmm. what kind of advice would you give people like me about how to best promote and produce a worthwhile podcast?
You know, you have to think wisely about how are you going to market yourself? You know, like who's my target audience? You know, what Facebook discussion group should I appear on to like drop hints about, hey guys, you know, there's this cool podcast that I'm doing, blah, blah, blah. Like, you got to figure out who's going to be interested in listening to your podcast. That's probably the most important thing. So finding your target audience and being able to market it well online, whether it's through Facebook or it's Twitter or Instagram, but you do need an online, you need a social media presence, you know? So, and then whatever name you've come up with, that should be your address at every, you know, don't be one name on Twitter and then a whole different name on Instagram and a whole different name on, it should be the same all the way through. So like for us, we're at the Delta Flyers on everything, on Instagram, we have a Discord, we have a Facebook private group for those that are part of the Patreon, a Facebook public group, those for those that are just listening for free, you know. So we've really tried to attack it on every single level that we can when it comes to social media. And then really do things like we did one thing where we had a contest where we were giving away these limited edition. We printed up five special Christmas holiday mugs that had all of our characters in cartoon version with holiday, you know, hats and sweaters on and stuff like that. And yeah, we did a giveaway, and the giveaway was, let's hear the most inventive five-star review for our podcast, you know, that you you put up the review and show us proof that you did that review, and we'll drop you into a drawing for these mugs. So we did that contest to sort of generate more reviews and cool reviews, you know, and these are all little tiny steps that you take towards getting a larger viewership. We're in talks with a couple of companies right now that want to do some sponsorship deals too. So yeah, so that's basically, it's just really realizing that you have to put your business hat on, you know? So, and that's something that for those of you out there that are actors, that you have to realize it's called show business for a reason. And it's literally 10% show, 90% business. And a lot of people that are creative, a lot of actors would shun that. They was like, I'm an artist, I'm a creator, I don't pander to business, you know? And it's like, well, if you don't pander to business, you're not going to get anywhere. You know, you really have to know that you've got to put on your actor hat at times to do your work. But then it's literally self-promotion. You're promoting the product you're promoting is yourself, you know, and you have to take a business attitude about that and understand how what it is to have a successful business, you know? And first and foremost, people have to know about it. you can't succeed. If you open up a restaurant, how are you going to succeed if no one knows you exist? You know? So it's really about placing yourself in the right positioning yourself in the right circles, right? In the right platforms. And we've done a decent job. We could do a better job for sure. You know, Robbie mentioned the other day, he was like, yeah, I feel like our patrons on Patreon is sort of, it's probably leveled off. I go, no, it's still a constant. We keep adding more patron subscribers. Like they're definitely, there was a big rush in the beginning from all the diehards, but now it's more of the fringe fans, the fans that they love the show, but they're not, you know, scouring the internet for every tidbit, you know, of information on Tom Paris or Harry Kim. And these people are now finally like, oh, I had no clue you guys were doing this podcast. So even now, you know, coming up on this year in May will be our 1 year anniversary of doing the podcast. There's still people that are just learning about it. So we still could do a better job in advertising ourselves as well. So that's something I plan on doing. A goal or New Year's resolution is being a little bit better of a businessman.
Well, while you guys are reviewing Star Trek Voyager episodes, are you finding that you guys are like learning and picking up new things in this episodes, even about your own characters that you didn't know before?
Oh, yeah. There's definitely times that we'll watch an episode. And so just to let you know, our format is we'll get together on a Zoom call and we'll do the intro. And the intro is basically, welcome to the Delta Flyers. You know, we're a podcast that reviews and comments on each episode of Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself and Robbie Duncan McNeil and Tom Paris. And then I'll be like, hey, Robbie, what's going on? You know, how's it going? Oh, yeah, you just moved to Vancouver. You're directing a new. So we'll do a quick intro just talking about daily life. And then we say, okay, well, it's time for us to play a little game of what do we remember for our Patreon patrons. So then we do a little extra bonus segment for them. And for everybody else, stay tuned as Robbie and I go watch the episode. So then we literally physically, we record the intro, put it on pause on Zoom, go watch the episode, take notes and come back. And then we discuss. And then that's the body of the podcast. And 9 times out of 10, we'll be like, I have no clue that I filmed that scene right there. Like what? What the heck? Or like, what did I just say? Or like, you know, I didn't know I did that. You know, so we're always finding things that we forgot about or didn't. You know, but still, it's super fun because there are times that he'll remember something. Something will trigger him, and he'll come up with like, oh my God, I remember that when we were working with that dog in the show, that dog would not do the one thing they had to do. Or, you know, I'll talk about, yeah, in that one episode with the hawk, you remember the hawk flew away? Like it did one take. And then on the second take, it like left the owner or like the trainer and flew to like Bakersfield. It was like, bye, I'm gone, like that. So like these little stories will be resurrected because of the watch, of the rewatch. We'll be like, holy crap, I remember that now. So yeah, we always find new stuff.
Well, there's one episode I definitely want to ask about. I'm on the Star Trek Voyager fan group on Facebook, okay? Mm-hmm. And I did post that I'm interviewing you, and does anyone have any question they want me to ask? And the one person actually had a really good question.
Okay.
It's a gentleman named Greg. I'm going to get the name wrong. I'm going to apologize ahead of time. I suck with names. Varesco, I think is how he pronounces it.
How do you spell question, it?
Wereszko.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm going with Varesco, and because I did message him saying, is it, how do you say it? He did say the W sounds like a V, so I'm going to go with Varesco.
Yeah, sounds like a Polish name or Czech name or something like that. Eastern European name.
It could be like, either way, I know I'm going to get it wrong.
You did a pretty good job. I think you did well.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
His question was about an episode called Deadlock, okay? Which obviously, you know, because you're one of the main characters in the episode.
Yeah.
In that episode, the original Ensign Kim is replaced by a duplicate.
Yeah.
And from that point forward, it's always the duplicate Ensign Kim that we see on the show. Did that change at all how you approached the character? Did it change how maybe you acted as the character? And did that ever play up later on in the series? Like, oh, by the way, this is not the original one.
No, people joke about that's why you never got promoted, because you were not the real Harry Kim. But then we just reviewed that episode recently on our podcast, and we kind of have a debate going on there, because some people believe that Harry Kim is the only original to survive and everybody else is a duplicate. Okay. Because it's very confusing in terms of who's the original and who is the copy. But there are some that believe that Kim is the only one left alive and everybody else is a duplicate. But if you're going off of what Greg is asking, and if we assume that the Harry that survives is the duplicate, no, it didn't change the way I acted at all. Because if you think about it, he's an exact copy. So there really shouldn't be any difference in terms of how he acts. But no, and there is really zero reference to that later on. And, you know, that's kind of how that's how they conceived Voyager. They conceived each episode to be a high concept episode that should stand alone, because they wanted they wanted someone who was not a Star Trek fan to be able to channel surf, come across it and go, oh, okay, and get into the show and become a fan of a show after one episode. You see what I'm saying? So yeah. A lot of the shows, they sort of stand, they don't have a lot of reference to other episodes. So, yeah.
That would be an interesting philosophical situation for that character to be in, to be the duplicate. Mm-hmm. Do you kind of wish they revisited and kind of looked into what it would be like in the psychology to know that he wasn't the real one or the original one?
Yeah, that'd be cool. I would have loved that. You know, that would have been an interesting exploration of that character.
I always felt when watching Voyager that they could have done more with Kim. That I kind of felt like once again, I do love the character. And again, I love the show, but that they kind of trapped him a little bit and not developed him as the show continued. Do you feel that similar?
Yeah. What was, I think, the most difficult hurdle to get over for those writers was giving adequate character development to all 9 series regulars. So if you think about that, and if you break it down to, let's say, 20 episodes a year, you know, each character is getting like 1, maybe 2, you know, episodes that focus on their character. And that's it. And with the arrival of 7 of 9 in season 4, Voyager season 4, 5, and 6 really became the Dr. Janeway 7 show. It's like all these episodes focus on those 3 characters and everybody else were given tidbits, you know. So it's tough. And as a writer, I think that's a bit of a cop-out, because it's so much easier to write for the Doctor than it is for Harry Kim. It's so much easier to write for 7 of 9 than it is for Harry Kim, because, you know, for those 2 characters, the Doctor and 7 of 9, they're almost the same in that this episode, let's focus on what it's like for 7 of 9 to go on a date for the first time. You know, let's focus on this episode on the Doctor getting a cold for the first time. So it's like, you know, it's again, they did the same thing with Data and TNG. It's easier, so easy to write for Data. It's so easy to write for 7 of 9 or for the Doctor that it's a bit of a cop out. It's kind of like lazy on the part of the writers, I think. Like they sat there and said, okay. Should I take the time to put on clothes, get in my car, and drive to the restaurant? Or can I just call delivery? And so, you know, when you write an episode for the Doctor or 7 of 9, you are just, you're doing delivery. You're like, I'm not going to get up. I'm not going to take the time or the effort to go to the restaurant and eat. And so if you want to do a Harry Kim storyline or Tom Paris or Chakotay, you got to put on your clothes, get in your car, and go to the restaurant. And 9 times out of 10, especially in the later episode, later seasons of Voyager, the writers were like, nah, I'll take the easy way, you know?
right.
So yeah, and I don't, you know, I don't blame them. I'm not criticizing them. I understand that's human nature. If you see 2 paths and one is covered in thorns and thickets and it's not paved, you're going to take the paved road. You're going to be like, I'll go that way. So I have, you know, there's no love lost with the writers. I mean, when they did do a Harry episode, they did a good job. But, you know, like I said, it's so much easier to do a 7 episode or a Doctor episode than a Harry episode. So yeah, so it was unfortunate, but that's the way it ended up.
Do you think they took input from you on your character at all? Like, did you feel
no?
Like you had the freedom to be like, hey,
no. Yeah, that's definitely one thing I've regretted this entire time, because I fed them a lot of ideas. I did, and they were shot down repeatedly. And it was one of my ideas was, I said, okay, I know in Next Generation, Worf was able to, you see Worf doing judo, you know, or some martial arts. And I said, hey, I want Harry Kim to do some martial arts, you know? And so I even went as far as training in Krav Maga, which is the Israeli self-defense system. And I thought, I'm going to get it. They're going to say, for sure, you know, we're definitely going to, you know, green light that idea. No, they were like, nyeh. They didn't like that. I said, how about we have a shipwide talent show? And Ensign Kim gets up and does his impersonation of the doctor and of Janeway. And they were like, nah. But, you know, it was horrible because there's probably three to five times that people do impersonations of other people on the show. Barclay from TNG fame, he comes on and he does his impersonation of Janeway. 7-9 has the doctor inside her body. So she does the impersonation of the doctor. And all these scenes that have series regulars or guest stars doing impersonations of other characters in the show, they have written me into the scene standing next to that person. And it's sort of like, you know, not only are we going to rip that Band-Aid off your wound, we're going to now throw salt in that wound and make you watch someone else do their impersonation of who you can do, you know, just as well or better and suffer. And it was like, oh, please. But my whole thing, my biggest question or my biggest suggestion the entire time was, more comedy amongst the human characters. More comedy amongst the human characters. You watch the original series, at the end of every original series, there's always that light banter that happens between Kirk, Spock, Bones. They're all in on it, right? But on Voyager, literally 97% of the humor was given to the Doctor, 3% was given to Neelix, and that's it. Everybody else got Jack. And I kept thinking, come on, you are literally wasting your resources here. And when I mean resources, I'm talking about the God-given talent or the God-given sense of humor that all these other characters that are not the Doctor and Neelix have, but you're not, it, you know, you're not utilizing that. Why wouldn't you utilize that? And that was just so frustrating. And there are times when I wanted to try to suggest a line change because writers will write stuff, but they won't say it out loud. So once you say a line out loud, sometimes it becomes a tongue twister and it doesn't come out very, very smoothly and it's awkward. So I would call the office to ask for a line change. 9 times out of 10, nope, not approved. Oh, wow. Make it work. And it was like, oh, make it work. Well, you try to say these damn lines, you know, this techno babble. Let's see how good you are at it, you know? Right. So, yeah, so there was definitely frustration on my part in that a lot of my suggestions went, you know, they fell on deaf ears. The only thing that I could have done differently is be a little bit more persistent in terms of just needling them to the point of until they finally kind of gave in, which is what the doctor did. I mean, the doctor would call up and say, hello, Bob Picardo here. I'd like to suggest that the doctor sings Italian opera. And they were like, no, Bob, we're not going to approve that. Hello, it's Tuesday. I'm just wondering if the doctor can sing Italian opera. And they're like, no, Bob. And he would call and call and call and call until finally they were like, fine, he will sing Italian opera. Stop calling us. So, you know, Bob really, he got stuff pushed through. There's a lot of things that he didn't, but he still, because of his persistence, he got stuff done. So he, you know, I admire him for the fact that he put his business hat on and he was relentless in terms of getting some of the things that the doctor ended up doing were suggested by him. And they went through. The only suggestion I had that was approved was at one point I said, I don't want to play the clarinet anymore. I want to play the saxophone. And so they put a saxophone in my quarters. That's you never see me playing the saxophone, but you see towards the, you know, the final seasons of Voyager, there is no longer a clarinet. There is a saxophone sitting there. Whether that had anything to do with watching President Clinton, who was the president at the time we were filming Voyager, playing the saxophone, I don't know. But I just thought I would really like a more hip, cooler instrument than the clarinet. And I apologize to all you clarinet band players out there, but the saxophone was sexier than the clarinet in my eyes at the time. So
now were they receptive to other actors? I mean, I know you said the doctor was able to push his way to get what he wanted. Were they more receptive to other actors with their suggestions?
No, they really weren't.
It was an entire writing staff thing of basically we're going to do things our way.
Yes.
that's odd because it feels like a lot of other shows you hear about how there's always a communication between the actors and the writers. Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting. They were like, no, screw it. No.
Yeah. And I thought it was just us. I thought, is this some personal vendetta against the Voyager actors, but I've heard since, you know, I mean, in the years since the end of Voyager, I've heard that the same thing went on with TNG. You know, the Next Gen guys had a suggestion and they'd call up the writers and the writers like, nope. So it's been like that for decades now, you know, so it wasn't just us.
That sounds so myopic in looking from their perspective. I mean,
agreed.
The actors know their characters many times better than even the writers do.
Agreed.
They have worthwhile input.
Yeah, I agree.
And ownership too.
Yeah. So as good of a show that Voyager is, Voyager could have been an even better show if collaboration was a word that the writers agreed upon, you know, if they were open to suggestion and then said, okay, you know, let's listen to what this actor has to say. You know, it would have been a better show by far.
Oh, well, one episode that you were in that was absolutely phenomenal was the episode Timeless,
mm-hmm.
where you get to play the older Ensign Kim, who is realizing the mistake that he made and goes into is in the future, sends signal back to try to save the life of the crew to cover his mistake.
Yeah.
What kind of decisions were you making as an actor to be the older Ensign Kim? And also, obviously, the director was LeVar Burton. What was also like working with him?
Whenever you work with directors that started as actors, it's good because they know what you're going through. You know, so anytime that they're sensing any uncomfortability from the actors, they usually have a good word or something to say or something to do that helps that actor feel more comfortable. Because that's how the best work happens. If you're relaxed, you know, it's the same thing with sports. You know, if you're all tight and tense, you can't properly, you know, properly perform whatever sport that you're doing. And same thing with acting. You need to be relaxed. And having a director who started as an actor is a plus for sure. And LeVar is a, you know, very open and generous individual, so it was good to having him there. The way that I chose to portray the older Kim really was just, it came from my preparation for that episode. I knew about probably about a month earlier that this episode was going to revolve around me. I got a call from Brandon Braga, the executive producer of Voyager, one of the executive producers of Voyager, and he said get ready. I said why? He said, in about a month, we're going to be filming the 100th episode of Voyager. This is going to be the signature episode of this series. We initially thought that we wanted to make it a two-parter, but then we reconsidered and felt, we're going to make it one episode, a standalone episode, not a two-parter. And we want this to be our City on the Edge of Forever, in reference to the original series episode, which is considered the best TOS episode, City on the Edge of Forever. So in their mind, they wanted this to be the best Voyager episode of all. And I said, well, that's cool. And he says, and it revolves around Kim. So get ready, get your sleep. Don't party too much, you know, make sure you're focused in and get this thing done. I said, I'm ready, man. I'm ready. And so when I got the script, I was just reading through and I was like, oh man. So, you know, there's two Kims. There's Kim that you know from watching everything up to season up to the 100th episode. And then there's the Kim that's 15 years older than that Kim. And that Kim has already seen everyone die except for Chakotay. So how do I play that Kim? That Kim is clearly racked with guilt. That Kim is clearly bitter through and through. Like every atom of his body is just saturated with guilt and bitterness, right? So he had to be definitely less optimistic, definitely more curt in his line delivery, more to the point, and just not as cheery as the Kim that you normally know, not as eager beaver, just someone who's sort of just seen it all and is a little bit shell-shocked, I might add. Somebody who has been dealing with a certain measure of PTSD in a way, right? So that's, you know, that's how I prepared. And really, that is the one episode where fans can see acting. I mean, if you look at a lot of the episodes, it's Kim on the bridge and he's reading lines that are expositional lines, you know,
yeah,
in terms of shields are down 30%, Captain. This is just a line of information. That's it. It's a line of information that Janeway will take, and then she moves on to the next character and says, well, Tuvok, tell me about this then, or Chakotay, let's do this. It's just information. So really, when you're an actor on a TV show and you're giving expositional lines, it's very difficult to showcase the level of acting ability within that, you know, I possess, that actor possesses by reading expositional lines. You just can't, because you're really just showcasing one note. It's a very one note performance when you read shields are down to 30%. You know, how many ways can you say that? You know, you can't sing it. Shields are down to 30%. You know, and you can't be like, you know, you're like, oh my God, shields are down to 30%. I can't act like super scared. I'm a member of Starfleet. I'm part of the military.
Right.
I've got to do my job, and I've got to do it and get it done. And I can't sit there and like act afraid, you know? So there's not a lot of acting that I get to showcase. So Timeless, I was able to showcase my acting. And I remember filming the scene where I figure out the right coordinates, and I realize I've finally done what I need to do to save the day. I'm going to get my friends back. It's this cathartic moment. And when the director yelled cut, Bob Picardo, the doctor, was in that scene with me, and he walked over to me and he goes, Garrett, you can act. Which was such a backhanded compliment. I mean, I sat there and I thought, screw you. I mean, how dare you? You thought I was some total lame-o, you know, crappy actor for the first 5 years, and now you say that I can act? Oh, it really pissed me off. And at the same time, I was proud that he said that to me. I felt like, oh, my uncle's giving me a prop. You know, he's patting me on the back. But I also felt like, screw you for saying that. Telling me this 5 years into the show, you know, but it's no fault of his, you know, just like anyone else watching the show, when he sat home and watched the newest episode that we filmed the first 4 years, it's all Kim saying shields down to 30%, you know? So he's probably going, any trained monkey could have been done that. You know, it could have been any Asian guy that they cast for that role, you know? So I don't blame him for that.
Does it make you angry to know that, you know, for those years, for first 4 years, that people were viewing you as an actor based on only those types of lines?
It's not anger. It's just frustration, you know, because I remember Ethan Phillips walking up to me season three. He was like, you know, Garrett, you should consider possibly doing theater one day. And I'm like, screw you. I've done theater. I remember the 5 years I was struggling, you know, with arguing with my parents. I had to do theater. I did theater all the time. Groundbreaking theater. I played so apart away from my type in a theater role called Porcelain. Played the part of John. I was John Lee or John Yu. I can't even remember the last name now. It's so long now. But I played the lead in that. I played a British Chinese teenager, gay teenager, that is dealing with, that's in prison for a crime of passion from an older Irish blue collar worker that he murders in a fit of rage. And so this is so opposite of me, because A, I'm not British. B, I'm not gay. C, I'm not a teenager. Like all these things that so I'm sitting here going, thanks, Ethan. Thanks for reminding me I should possibly try theater one day. Because again, same thing. He, just like Bob Picardo, were watching every episode of Voyager when it came out, new episode at home. And they would see me say shield down to 30% and think, wow, that's so unimpressive, you know? So it's not anger, it's just frustration. But I finally got validated and you know, I was able to not have the last laugh, but really just from that episode, Timeless alone, I was able to put my stamp on this show and say, yep, I deserve to be here. You know what I'm saying? Like, this was the right call. I was supposed to be Ensign Kim. Not every Asian guy could have pulled off that role, that I pulled off the performance that I gave in Timeless. You know what I'm saying? To be a completely, completely different character 15 years later. Someone who's just hired to speak exposition is not going to be able to pull that off, period. Somebody who's not trained as an actor, done enough theater, is not going to pull that off. So, and that was the one episode that people realized, oh, he wasn't just hired off the street. You know, he wasn't walking down the road. He wasn't at Starbucks and go, "Hey, you're Asian. Let's, you know, let's give you this role on Star Trek." No.
Right, right.
So yeah. So definitely not anger, just frustration, just really frustrated.
It's kind of, I was talking to an interview a couple of days ago with J.G. Hertzler from, he was in Deep Space Nine, a Dermar talk. And I was talking to him about how actors in sci-fi don't ever get the recognition they deserve as actors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they do find themselves pigeonholed into doing, like you said, exposition, technical jargon lines.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, like I said, that must have been, you know, a fantastic thing to be able to do a scene like Timeless and prove that, you know, that it go beyond the sci-fi kind of hole that they've kind of stuck you in for a few years.
Yeah, it is really gratifying, but it's only gratifying because it's gratifying to a point. And when I say that, I'm referring to the fact that it's the diehard Trek fans, the diehard sci-fi fans that have stuck around long enough to season 5 to have seen that and say, hey, he does have the acting chops. But from a casual viewer, from someone who's not a sci-fi fan, if they're channel surfing, they're all going to think that guy's like a trained monkey. All he says is like shields are down to 30%. And they're not going to think anything else of it. Right. And that's one of the frustrating things, that those that are not sci-fi or Trek fans out there, they don't get it. They don't get it. Like when you watch the Emmys or you watch the Academy Awards, no sci-fi project is nominated for best acting ensemble or best actor or best, you know, they're not. It's always Star Trek Voyager wins for best visual effects. They win the Emmy for best visual effects, but not for best acting, because the general consensus, especially amongst viewers of television and film that are not fans of sci-fi, is that science fiction is for kids.
Yep.
It's a kids show. You know, this is like for Saturday morning. It's not real. You know, it's not worthy of an Academy Award. It's not worthy of an Oscar or an Emmy. Well, and that's, you know, and I used to say this all the time during Emmy's time, like on our show, I'm like, you know what sucks, everybody? I said, we do some good work here. We're not acknowledged for it. And the only way that we would get nominated for best acting ensemble is if aliens showed up and made known who they were today. Because then people would be like, oh my God, Star Trek is not, you know, made up. It's real. There really are aliens, you know? So we kind of need Independence Day to really happen for Star Trek to get the respect they deserve.
You know, I think it's the same of the entire genre of sci-fi, because I'm my day job, I'm an English teacher. I mean, I teach English, obviously, literature all the time. And I mean, the entire curriculum, and I teach all 4 years of high school, 9th, 10th, 11th, I teach at a therapeutic high school.
Yeah.
There is literally no sci-fi books in the curriculum, like at all. Anyway, like no, even Isaac Asimov. No, not at all. I mean, it's like the entire genre is immediately just like thrown out, you know, out of hand. This is not worth, it's quality literature, you know?
Yeah. See, that's very frustrating. You know, it should be there. Asimov, there's so many great sci-fi writers out there that
Arthur C. Clarke.
Of course, that need to be showcased in our schools, in our elementary schools, our junior highs, our middle schools, right? But it's not. So yeah, science fiction, fantasy, you know, these are the genres that still do not garner the respect they deserve.
And the other thing I was thinking is, well, you had great chemistry with Tom Paris's character, Robert De Niro, Tom Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Did you think that relationship also limited what potential they gave your character?
Can you clarify that?
Because the relationship, the way it was on Star Trek Voyager, usually when there's Ensign Kim, there's Tom Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And they were kind of set up as like a unit.
Yeah.
Do you think that limited interaction, because he didn't have as much time with other crew members to kind of expand possibilities?
No, that doesn't bother me. I think again, we're dealing with the 9 series regulars. That's more of the issue of why they didn't write more storylines with Harry interacting with Chakotay or Harry and Neelix. You know, I mean, that's just by the nature of the beast, you know, they couldn't do it. It's just, it was easier to compartmentalize the Harry Kim relationship, which I'm fine with. I mean, literally, if you talk about duos in Star Trek, that's probably the strongest pairing of all the pairings. Like if you're looking at TNG or original series or DS9, nothing is a stronger bond than the Tom and Harry bond. I think that's the peanut butter and jelly of Star Trek.
I mean, that's exactly true. Well, obviously, one of the running jokes, obviously, with Kim is that the ensign thing, as mm-hmm. your tail's end is forever, and which is really funny.
Yeah.
Did it piss you off that they just never just gave? I mean, the funny thing about Star Trek is that you have, when they have the like the officers meeting, when they have the big decisions to make, and they have an ensign sitting at the table. Mm-hmm. And you think at some point when he makes the big decision, he's coming up big for, you know, the crew. At some point you got to promote him, at least on some, at least in an episode. Did that just piss you off? Like, why the hell did they just not do that?
Yeah. Again, very frustrating knowing that everyone else around me was getting promoted. And people were getting demoted, then remoted, promoted. It was like, what is happening? There was even an episode where I think Paris gets a promotion, and then I'm like, where's my pip? Like, they wrote that line into Gary's, you know, dialogue. It's like, where's my promotion? I'm like, what? Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. But also, people have to understand, he's still, ensign is the most junior officer. So he is an officer. It's not crewman Kim. It's ensign Kim, right? So
true, okay.
More of an obscure ranking because it's only naval, right? You don't have ensigns in the Army. You don't have ensigns in the Air Force. You do have ensigns in the Navy. That's it. And it's the most junior officer. So there is, you know, that misconception by some that, oh, he was just the private, you know, he was like the rookie. Yeah, he's new, but he's still an officer. He's the most junior officer. But he's still an officer. But yeah, typically I actually bumped into somebody that was in the U.S. Navy and I asked them, I said, okay, so if you're an ensign, 7 years later, what are you? And they're like, almost lieutenant commander. I go, thank you. Okay, almost lieutenant commander. So yeah, because you're, you know, the ranking goes from ensign to lieutenant junior grade, then full lieutenant, then lieutenant commander, right? So I should have almost made commander basically by the end of Voyager when we got home. And nope, he was still an ensign. So hence, Forever Ensign is the moniker I've been using. Like every video game that I play, that's the name that I go under. I go under Forever Ensign. So if you're if you're playing anything online and you see that name, you're like, oh, that's Garrett. So
see what they need to do is an alternate episode of Timeless where 15 years later, Harry Kim has been promoted and he's like, those guys, let them die. Yeah. I finally got my promotion and just run with it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Credits roll.
Yeah. The joke that I always talk about at conventions when people ask, so what happened to Harry? Like, what's Harry doing now all these years after the end of Voyager? I said, oh, it's so simple. Harry never got promoted. So he was so frustrated that he quit Starfleet, but in a way of sort of getting back at the Starfleet brass, he rents the office space right by the entrance, or he rents the commercial space by the entrance of Starfleet headquarters in San Francisco. And he opens up Admiral Kim's Bar and Grill, is what I say.
That's awesome.
He's like, come on down to Admiral Kim's Bar and Grill, where only ensigns and lower get a discount.
That's awesome.
And now, actually, with Forever Ensign, I'm about to launch a website under that name with some really cool t-shirts. So that's going to be coming up in the next month or so. So just so you
know. Well, what I'd like you to do when that does happen, send me an email with the link to that. We'll post it on we'll tweet it out.
We'll do.
Facebook. Yeah. We'll put it on our website, everything. Yeah. We'll make sure we push it.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Now, I read correctly, you're also in a new series called Phoenix. Is that correct?
Yes. Correct.
Now, what is Phoenix?
Phoenix is an episodic. I think they're shooting for Amazon. They're looking for it to be on Amazon Prime, I think. And it's sort of a kind of a thriller in a way, I guess. I play the role of an FBI agent in this one. So set in modern times. So it's not sci-fi, but it's, you know, intrigue, deception, you know, who's good, who's bad, I don't know, kind of a thing, you know. So I'm good, though. I'm not a bad guy. Spoiler alert.
So when will that show be available for us to watch?
I actually do not know. I mean, I'm waiting for them to tell me what's going on. So when I find out, I'll send you an email as well, so you can make that announcement.
So, and last I saw, there's 6 episodes filmed. How many are there going to be?
Again, not privy to what production is planned for that at all. I'm just the hired hand. I'm the actor. That's it. So I've worked on, I think, 3 of the episodes so far, something like that. So, yeah. So we'll see, you know, we'll see what happens. Yeah.
Are you enjoying this big experience more?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I took a very long break from Hollywood. So when Voyager ended in 2001, from 2001 to 2005, so we're talking a four-year span, I had only five auditions per year in that four-year span. It was horrible. It was like the Sahara Desert. It was just nothing, completely dried up in terms of acting roles. There was nothing. So I took a break. In 05, I left Hollywood. I traveled the world. Saw about 30 plus countries in a five-year span, so 2005 to 2010. All I did was travel. Very eye-opening. I mean, I got to do things that I've wanted to do, but I couldn't do because when I was working on Voyager, I was so busy. I had no time to do anything. Like literally, we had 7 days off each year when I was working Voyager. Other than the weekends, we had just one week vacation where they didn't need us. So that's pretty bad. So I spent 5 years just goofing off. Traveling, everywhere you can think of. Central America, Russia, Ukraine, parts of Asia, you name it. I was there. And then I came back in 2010 with the full intent on jumping back into Hollywood and starting the acting thing all over again. And then I veered left and I started playing golf, which I played golf every day for about 3 years. So I still didn't, I didn't go back. And not until very recently, as in, I think it was 2018, I was at a convention in Vancouver Island and I bumped into a manager who he said, he didn't say anything to me like the first 2 days. And then like, the third day at lunch, he goes, I didn't think he knew who I was. He's like, so yeah, I've just been wondering what happened to you. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, yeah, you just dropped off the radar. I was, I was actually a fan of your show. I watched Voyager when it was out. And then I followed your career. You did one thing after Voyager. You did Into the West on TNT in 2005, and then you disappeared. And I said, yes, sir, I did disappear. And he's like, for 13 years? And I go, yeah, for 13 years, I disappeared. I really did. So I explained everything to him. And he was like, well, if you're interested in coming back and to Hollywood, I'd be interested in representing you. So now he's my manager. So Chris Rowe is his name. And he's been my manager since 2018, end of 2018, basically. So yeah. So that's, I needed the break. I mean, I was working so hard on Voyager that I just felt like my soul was being, not crushed, but definitely stepped on, And when I mean stepped on, like, me making suggestions and them being shot down, me trying to get a line change and that being shot down, and just me asking why I'm still an ensign and that being shot down. Like everything was like, really? I am doing everything for this show and you guys are not, meeting me halfway in the slightest. And so it was difficult. It was just so difficult. I felt like I needed to recharge my soul, my mental state, my physical state, everything needed a recharge. And once I took the recharge, boy, it's so much easier being lazy than working. It really is. to be able to say, I'm flying to Hong Kong, see ya. That's a lot easier than going, I'm going to prepare for this audition or prepare for whatever. But what I did return to was a Hollywood that's completely different now. The auditions where you drive to go to see a casting director and audition on tape where they record you there, that's gone. You don't do any of that anymore. That's completely out of the equation. Nowadays, it's all self-tape. You use your cell phone to record yourself and you take that file and upload it and email it, attach it to the email and send it into your manager and they send it into the casting director. And that's it. Done. And so there's good and bad things about that. The good thing is if you screw up, you get to redo it again. You can do 50,000 takes until you find the right one. But the bad thing is you don't have anyone to really read off of. I mean, you typically have to get a spouse or a significant other or find a place that it specializes in self-tapes that can, you pay them to read with you. So it's really kind of changed things because part of what worked for me in the past in terms of booking roles was these casting people were meeting me in face to face. They could feel my energy. They could sense who I was. You know what I'm saying? And when you record yourself on your iPhone or your Android device, it's really, you know, unless you use some superior lighting setup with amazing sound and really everything, it's just tough to really convey to a casting person or a production or producer or director what you're all about. You know what I'm saying? And I just think it's really sad that it's come to that, but that's just the way the business has changed. You know, since I took my prolonged hiatus, that's how it has changed. It's become a lot more impersonal, and impersonal doesn't play towards my strengths.
I would have figured it probably with COVID, it was going to head in that direction, I assume.
Yeah, that's true. If it hadn't headed in that direction yet, COVID definitely put it in that direction, right? Yeah.
Now, the interesting thing is that with Star Trek, anyway, with CBS All Access, you know, you have Discovery, then you have Picard. Mm-hmm. Has there been any discussion of having either the Voyager crew back into the CBS All Access world with Picard or whatever, or you specifically coming back on?
Well, we've seen Seven of Nine make her appearance in Picard. They've made the announcement that Janeway is coming back in her own show, which I think is going to be on Nickelodeon. So
Nickelodeon.
I'm not sure if it's animated but you know, Janeway is going to be back. And, you know, fans are always saying, oh, we want to see you on one of the new things, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, it'd be great to see you do this, but nothing yet. I can say that my manager did field a call from CBS Paramount, and they were asking about my availability at the beginning of 2021. And they were asking this at the end of last year. So I'm feeling as if something is coming down the wire for me that has to be Star Trek related. I don't know if it's Discovery, if it's Picard, if it's Lower Decks. I have no clue, but it is, or maybe the Nickelodeon show, who knows? But there is some interest. There is some talk. They would not divulge what they were talking about. And all they said to the manager was, we need to know his availability, you know, and that's it. So.
Well, it'd be great to see Harry Kim come back and
Captain Kim. Let's see Captain Kim.
That would be awesome. that would be awesome. And then he has one ensign that's been on the ship for like 10 years. He's still an ensign. and he's just dicking that one guy for no reason.
yeah. And he's always like, when am I ever going to get promoted? He's like, and I'd say, just get in line, buddy. Get in line.
that'd be fantastic. I definitely would tune in for that.
Yes.
Every week.
Me too. Me too.
Thank you so much, Mr. Wong, for speaking with me. It was a fantastic pleasure and a great honor.
Jeff, thank you so much. I enjoyed it. I usually, you know, a lot of times when I'm interviewed, it's so quick, I don't really get to say anything. But we really took the time and got through a lot of stuff. We really tackled a lot of different subjects, and I enjoyed it. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And like I said, when Phoenix is ready to premiere, please come back on the show and we'll talk Phoenix.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a fantastic, fantastic night.
All right, buddy. I'll see you later.
Yep. Thank you.
And we're back.
That's right. We are back. Back in the saddle again. Well, I hope you guys really, really enjoyed that as much as we did making it for you. And if you like what you heard and you want to hear more, you got to go check out spoilerverse.com, because at spoilerverse.com, we have a plethora. Plethora is such a snobbish word.
I like it, though. it's a good word.
we have an obscene amount of interviews obscene. With amazing directors and artists of all walks of life, and editors and writers, and oh my god, are you a lover of comic books like we are? Then there's so many amazing people from the comic book world over at spoilerverse.com, and I highly implore you to go there and check it out.
Yeah, and while you're there, you can check out all the other podcasts on our network, like Bridges of the Geekdoms and Funny Book Forensics and Haphazard Adventures and Nerds from the Crypt and so many more.
Misery Point Radio.
Episodes all the time. Misery Point Radio has got a ton of great stuff out there. Go check all of them out. And check out all of the reviews and previews and articles we have going up every single day for you, every day on Spoilerverse.com, for you to check out, to read, and to love, and to like, and to comment. We have a store link. If you want to help support the site, you do it two ways. One, go to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/spoilercountry, or go to our store link in the middle of the site there and get a t-shirt, a face mask, a hoodie, something. Look fly as hell and help support the site when you do that, because we get a dollar or two. And, you know, maybe you want to talk to us. If you do, you can do it, you know, obviously on all the socials. But if you go to scpod.us/discord, you can join our public Discord server and come chat with us all day long.
I couldn't say it better myself, dude.
There you go.
You just mouthed out a ton of information at once. And really, I hope you guys enjoy what you're hearing, because we're working our butts off to bring it to you.
We are.
I guess there's only one left thing. One left thing?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with it. There's only one left thing left to do.
What's that?
In an oceans of podcasts, we are Cthulhu. As Cthulhu compels you to do, open the mind.
And
even more.